going to be Marie.
I'm an addict. My name is Marie.
Hi.
There's a lot of people. I need to say at first that I am French. It's my second time speaking in English. So please bear with me if I'm looking for my words, if I'm nervous, or if I'm freaking out a bit. I might need to pray for a second. So my subject is surrender to win. And I've been asked to speak a week ago, and I've been thinking of how am I going to explain what is surrendering to me and surrendering. And I've looked in the dictionary for definitions of surrender and surrendering, and I came to a conclusion that it basically surrender for me is something I need to do many times in my life, only to come and here to speak to you guys tonight. You know, like I had to surrender to my fears and surrender to my higher power and just give it up and let him give the message that needs to be spoken tonight. And if I can help one of you tonight, my job will be done. So I'm going to just tell you my story, how it is, and I'll try to point out as the best that I can how I surrender for my recovery. So I come from a family of 8 kids. So my mom remarried and my dad remarried. I have a wealthy family, so we never ran out of money or food. So I'm very lucky for that, but we did ran out of love and care. As a child, I couldn't be close to my mom. The closest I could be to her was on the floor. She wouldn't tell me she loved me, she wouldn't touch me, she wouldn't care for me, she was just paying for me. So I think that's where it started for me as an addict, or as I had this, I don't know how to say it. I was lacking love and attention. So as a little kid, I would do anything I could do for you to love me. I would talk really, really loud. I still do sometimes. I will take a lot of space. I still do sometimes, but hey, you know. Today, the difference is that I accept myself for who I am, but when I was young, I couldn't. And that's how I arrived in life, and that's how I was equipped to deal with life and go on in life. So at a very young age, I would get involved with the wrong crowd, the wrong people, the wrong guys. I would always do everything for you to love me, like I said. And I met the substance really young, and I left home really young as well. I started partying and skipping school to go and use, and it started with the light drugs and alcohol, and then it went to the harder drugs. And when I met my drug of choice, I also met a boyfriend of mine that was a dealer. I was 15, and I left home, and I didn't know nothing about life. I just knew that I wanted to party, and I wanted that man to be in my life, and he was doing drugs, so I was doing drugs as well. And that's my using journey that started. So I, at 15, I met my drug of choice, and from 15 to 25, I used that drug every day. It was easy for me at first because I always had it. We always had it until we got into debts and that we couldn't pay the bigger person on top of us, you know? I was lucky though. I always managed to work or go to school and come home and go to bed, because I think since I had a boyfriend, I think I was lucky enough to come home to him and I didn't have to go deeper in my using, you know? But what I had to give to keep using is my self-care, my self-love, my self-esteem, my health. I got really, really sick. It started with nose damage. I went to the doctor and he was like, oh, well, you have holes, and I'm sure anybody in here can relate to that. I got home that day and I'm like, oh my God, I tell my partner, I'm sick, I have holes in my nose, I can't use anymore. And half an hour later, I had the pusher knocking on my door, you know? I went to a point that I started losing everything, and I started losing myself. And for me to know, like the shock to know what the drugs were doing to my life, on the spot, it was a horrible thing, but half an hour later, my addict was there, and he didn't give a fuck, sorry, of my health. You know, all he wanted was to me to get high, and that's what I would do. And I don't know if any of you have been in relationship with your drug of choice, but it's so hard. Like, one day I would be like, okay, tomorrow we're not using, and the next day you would be like, just a little bit. I would be like, oh, okay. And then the next day would be him that would be like, okay, tonight we're not using, and I'd be like, fine. And I would be the one coming home with the drugs, you know. And I used to say that I was a different addict. I was different than all of you because I would get up in the morning and I would go to work every day. I didn't lose my job. I did not pay my rent. I always pay my rent on time, you know, but I was asking my mom for money for food, but it was really for food, but my money was going for drugs. So that's how my addict lied to me throughout my using to, like, tell me that I was okay, I was better, because I was using just a little bit every day and I would go to bed, but you were using a lot every weekend. You know, you had a problem because you would spend $500 in the night, but I would just spend $100 every day. I was a lot better, you know? So that's something that I told myself, and that's how I kept using for so long, and I think that's how it took me so long to hit rock bottom, is that I was always stretching it. I was always carrying it over and finding excuses for me. And I had people in my surrounding close to me that they were real drug addicts. You know, they were doing a lot of drugs. They were doing any kind of drug. I was only doing one kind, you know, like I was the best. And yeah, for real. And then I started, like, my family started pushing me away because at one point they didn't know what to do anymore. And they were saying I was lying. I was saying I was not, because the money they would give me was really for food. They were trying to explain to me that I was using my money for drugs, so it's the same thing, you know? So one day I went to the doctor. And it was a general, like, at that point, me and my partner, we were both sick. Like I said, we would always go to work, though, but struggling, you know? Like, I needed the sleeping pills to stop using to go to bed. But that I wasn't seeing that I had insomnia. So, you know, it wasn't my fault. I was sick. So at that point, we're both sick. I'm falling on the ground a lot. He needs to pick me up and feed me to, like, give me sugar to boost me back up to keep using. Not to stop, but to keep using. I couldn't eat often. I was going at work and I had a lunch, and I was consciously making the decision to take my lunch, put it in the garbage, and call the dealer and go get high on my lunch break instead of eating, you know? I find that now that I look at it with a step back, is horrible. But that's the decision that I was making every day. And I went to the doctor one day, and she was doing my, because I had like five doctors. I live in Gatineau, and I had like two doctors that I would pay on the Ontario side every time I had an infection. My face was all swollen because my family doctor didn't know. So I go for my annual exam. Anyways, the word, to see my doctor, and she starts looking at me, and she touches my legs at the bottom there, and she's like, we have a problem. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, you have no more circulation in your lower body. I'm like, what do you mean? And she explained to me that, you know, when a blood clot, like somebody gets sick and they do a blood clot in their leg, they go to the hospital and they can do a surgery and they can unclot it and you can survive. But what she was telling me, the difference with me, because I was using drugs, because at that point I had to come clean, like she knew I was 15, what can be wrong? I was 25, going on 25, 10 years later. So I had to tell her what I was doing and what kind of drugs and the quantities, and she explained to me that when you have no more circulation on the lower part of your body or whichever part of your body because of the use of drugs, when you're tes artères, I don't know how to say it, arteries, when they block, they're seized. You go to the hospital, there's fuck all they can do. They can't do anything. They can't unclot it. You die. So she's like, you have about 3 months left to the point you are to live, right? Because you're going to die. There's no way around you're dying. I didn't have any circulation. So once again, I get home and I tell my partner, I'm dying. I have to stop using. or else she told me she gave me a month to stop to do something on my own, or she was gonna hospitalize me forced because I was in danger for my life. So I get home, I'm gonna die. Half an hour later, I'm using again. And at that point, I realized I had given up. I had given up on living. I had given up on surviving. I had given up on stopping to use. I have given up on myself. Anything and everything, I couldn't care less. All I wanted is to get high, to not feel. I thought it was harder to stop using than to just die, you know? So today, with the recovery that I have, with the belief that I have a higher power, a power higher than myself, I think that a couple weeks after I saw my doctor, I was sitting in the living room with my boyfriend, and we were using as usual. And don't ask me what happened. I think it was my higher power that just picked me up and made me leave. I just stand up and I left. I didn't say a word. He found out about 4 hours later. It was really hard after being in a relationship for 4 years and building your life with someone for 4 years. You need to save your own. You need to walk away, right? And when I walked away that door, I didn't know if that person wasn't gonna die. So that was pretty hard on me. But I did, and I went and I used so much that night, but that's what it is, you know? And the next day I knocked on my mom's door and I asked for help. And she agreed, so I moved back in with my mom at 25, and they're like, you need to go to meetings. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, NA meeting, because I never heard about it before. I did like some sort of therapy a little bit before that. I went twice. It was the one that you can stop gradually, so every time I would go, I was high, so it didn't work at all for me. I was sitting in therapy, and I was shaking because I was so high, you know, like, what's the point? So she's like, you need to go meeting. I'm like, no, mom, I can't go to meetings. It's not going to work. I can't sit in the room full of fucked up people that I'm not, because I have a job. And I went to university high and I succeeded. Listen to them talk about drugs. I'm going to get out of there and I'm going to want to go get high. So my mom bought it because she's not an addict and she doesn't know what it is, you know? She doesn't know NA more than I did at the time. So it worked for a little bit. So I told my mom I had stopped using. I was lying. I was still using, but I was using only at work. So I had to stop at around 2 to be able to get home and eat at 5, you know? Like our parents normally eat, normal people eat. So I had to not use to be able to get home and eat. So it worked for about a week. And then, of course, the addiction was stronger than me, and I couldn't control it, and I bailed on dinner. And she knew it. I was sitting in my car, and I didn't want to get out. I was just using in my car. It was stronger than me. And so she let the one time slide, because I'm an adult. There's not much she can do, and she doesn't know what to do. So I go back to work, and the next day I slip even further. But that time I'm like, I overdid it, and I'm hiding in the woods somewhere. And my sister, boyfriend, his mom, is married to a member of Narcotics Anonymous from somewhere in the States, and he happens to be in town, so they come and pick me up, and they talk to me to go home, and they talk to me a bit about Narcotics Anonymous and what it is, but I'm closed-minded. I don't have a problem. I can control it. I was doing it fine for a week, you know? So, but he brought... a week, yeah. But they brought me home, and when I got home... It's funny because at the time I didn't see it like that, but now with, I don't know, they kind of did a little intervention on me. So all my family was there and they were all outside at my mom's house. And I think that one of the reasons that made me want to stop, because at that point I wanted to stop using, I just didn't know how. And I thought that using half of what I used to use would be okay. Is my sister got a little baby, it's Jeremy, and I remember when he was born, I was so high, I couldn't even hold him in my arms, and I promised that I wouldn't be high, and I was, you know? And when I got there, he was newborn, he was a little small, and the first thing I did, I was ashamed, so I went and I picked up Jeremy, and I took him in my arms, and I went back in the house to avoid everybody, right? Because that's what I do. I'm an addict, so I don't want a confrontation. I don't want to talk about my problems. I certainly don't want to admit what I'm doing, you know? But it didn't work. So my sister got followed me in the house, and she grabbed the baby and she said, no, this is it. Like, you either go to meetings. She handed me a list of meetings. It was a Sunday night. She gave me a list of meetings and she said, you either go or you're out. Like, we can't deal with this anymore. It's too hard on everybody. So once again, I think it's a higher power that held me up to do that move that day. Because before, that would have been just an excuse to run and use more. You're rejecting me? Fuck off. I'm going to get high, you know? But I jump into my car and I drove to my first meeting. It was a discussion meeting. And on the French side, it's mostly speakers. So it was a discussion meeting, and I remember I was probably green. I was like 90 pounds. I had my hoodie on my head, and I had my sister on my phone, and she talked to me until I crossed the front door. And as soon as I got into the room of Narcotics Anonymous, there was a young girl sitting in the circle, and she just said, come over. So she pulled the chair for me. She says, sit down. Listen, you're not going to understand half of it. It doesn't matter. There's one important moment for you at the end, and it's the newcomer moment. Please get up and go get your key tag. That's all I'm asking for you. So that's what I did. I sat there and I listened. I didn't understand a freaking word that was said in that meeting. I don't remember none of it. But I stood up and I went and got that key tag. So I think that's the first time that I surrendered. That's the first time that I surrendered to my addiction, that I surrendered to my family, that I surrendered to myself, and that I was admitting first off to myself that I was an addict, that I was dying, and I needed to do something about it. So I didn't stay clean, but what I did, though, I went to a meeting every day from that day on, and every day I would get up and go get a key tag. I would relapse every day. I would use every day at work. That was my last little struggle. I would eat at night. I would make it on time to eat dinner, but I would still use again on my lunch break. And but the woman's, because woman came to me, and I was very lucky that woman came to me in that first meeting, and what they told me is, You're not going to understand, but just keep coming back. Keep coming back and keep coming back and keep getting up and pick up your key tag. And one day you're going to feel that it's enough, that you don't want to go back to pick up that freaking white key tag. And it's going to work. So I'm like, fine, that's what I did. So I did it. I went every day and I was crying. I was so ashamed to go back every day. It was like failure day after day. But after that, I took it and I sat down and people will come and hug me. I needed so much love and attention and affection when I got into those rooms that it at one point it worked, you know? Like, I kept coming, and it was funny because my mom, she didn't know much about NA, but she's like, hey, so how come you're always coming back with a white key tag? So I'm like, oh, mom, the first 30 days, you always get a key tag, every day. So I kind of bought my way out of my first 30 day relapsing every day. And then when I really got my 30 days, my orange, I came clean and I said, ha, 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 I got you. But anyways, you know, it was too late because I had it. I had my 30 days. And So that's how I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I had a relapse. Relapse hurts. I've learned the hard way that, you know, in my recovery, I'm the most important person. In Narcotics Anonymous, the newcomer is, but in my recovery and in my life, I'm the most important person. I met a guy at 15 days clean. He was awesome. He had a year clean. He was a king. Yeah. He relapsed. He beat me up. He strangled me. He destroyed my apartment. He destroyed everything I had. But I kept coming to meetings, so I stayed clean during that time. You know? That's the beauty of Narcotics Anonymous. At one point, there was other women in the rooms that had went through what I was going through, and they were able to direct me to go see the people and the help that I needed, because they say it. If we need exterior help, we are allowed to go get it. We need to go get it. At some point, I had to put a stop on my step work and on my service and on my stuff, because I was dying in another aspect of my life. You know, I needed to go get help. I needed to surrender again to be able to stand up again. And that's what Narcotics Anonymous is bringing to me. Service. I love service. When I got clean, like I said, I needed a lot of affection. I needed all the attention from all of you. There's this meeting in on the Quebec side in Gatineau. It's the Friday night meeting. Everybody dress up. It's so fun. So I did, I don't know how to say it, l'accueil. How do you say it in English? Greetings at the door. I was on my top notch. I would at the door, and people were coming back in and out to give me some hugs. It was awesome. It was awesome. I would get off work, run home, do my hair, and that every Friday I was there, the first person at the door and the last one to leave. But hey, was I getting enough attention, you know? Like, it was awesome. So at another point in my life, I didn't want to be touched. I didn't want to be hugged. I didn't want to be talked to because I was hurting inside, but I needed to come to meetings. And I made it clear to people. And people in the rooms respected me. They respected what I needed and what I could and could not give, you know, at that point. I went through different positions of service in Narcotics Anonymous, and they're all awesome. They all brought to me different things and made me grow in different ways, from grieving to a secretary in a group. I've learned that, once again, my recovery is the most important thing in my life. I had to remove myself from that position because I was in danger. For some reason, that area wasn't safe for me anymore, so I had to put humility in my recovery and in myself, and accept the fact that I had to go do service somewhere else and not take it as a failure, you know? Then you can do a service in the big thing like Orkna, which is also awesome. And I found that, like, to be involved in convention is, it's not for, like, when I was standing in the door asking for, like, your attention, you know? It's the beauty of doing service and working with a team and learning to know people and personalities and putting something together and giving back, you know? That's what I get about out of service. Sponsorship. I had a sponsor since the beginning of my recovery. I had to change a couple of times, and it was hard sometimes. I've been rejected too. I'm learning that NA, it's a perfect program. The program of Narcotics Anonymous is perfect. The people in it is, we're human, you know? We're not perfect. We do mistakes. I do mistakes. Others do mistakes. I hurt people. People hurt me. And it's about finding the right person. How much time do I have? 15 minutes. And it's about finding the right person for me. And this time I'm so blessed. I'm so grateful to have found the sponsor that I have. I can go to her to pretty much everything. Right now I'm dating someone outside the rooms, and I don't know if some of you have tried that. It's hard. Man, it's hard. Like, I call my sponsor sometimes and I'm like, I'm explaining this and that to him, and he doesn't understand. And she takes the time to explain to me that I'm so lucky to be in Narcotics Anonymous because I learned to talk about my emotions. I learned to set boundaries. I learned to tell people how, to show people how they're going to treat me now. I don't let people treat me the way they want to and then be a victim in that, you know? And that, and sometimes I think, and I'm like, man, am I so lucky to have all that? Like, this guy, he's gonna take a long time before he gets all that, you know? Like, man. No, but it's true. Like, there's luck in every bad luck, I think. I was lucky to have a couple sponsee, and that was hard, I found, at the beginning, because I'm a saver. I want to save everybody. I want you not do what I've done. Like, don't get in a relationship. He's not a god, because you have a year clean, you know? Like, go to meetings. I want to go pick them up and bring them to meetings. And I want to take their hand and bring them to the front to get their key tag like I did, to feel the shame and the hurt and everything that comes with it, for them to like come back for themselves. But I can't. So it's about surrendering to that as well, you know, and letting go and letting God and not trying to control everything, because I like to control, but I'm working on that hard. It's like my boyfriend, eh? He's not an addict, so, buddy, you can go out, not with that person and not in that bar, you know? Yeah, that's me wanting to control, but, so that's what I find hard about, sponsoring. I just want to be a saver. I don't want people to hurt. I don't want them to do the same mistake as me. Step work. I've noticed that every time I was going through something in my personal life, that I would sit down and work my steps, something would come out to help me in the present moment. Something will come out and help me deal with what I'm dealing that day at that moment, or close to, or, you know, like make me reflect on that and figure it out. Or it will make me call my sponsor about the step, the question, and it will help me grow. And if it doesn't, then I need to keep writing, you know? So steps are very important in Narcotics Anonymous. It's a 12-step program for a reason. Work your step. Last year, I had to go for surgery. And so when I went, they said I had a cyst on my ovary. And when I went there, they did the surgery. They opened me up. And 2 months later, I was still in pain. And when I went back, they told me I had a disease, whatever. And so I had to go through a treatment, and treatment is I'm going to be 30 this month. So they put my body in menopause. They were injecting me every month a shot in my ass, and it gave me menopause. So I had all the symptoms of a woman being menopausing at 29. It was horrible. Okay, and like the only person that would understand me is my mom, because she's menopausing right now. But the thing is that menopause is hard when you're 50, but when you're 29 and it's injected to your body, it's like you get the anxiety. You know, when I used to use and I would use too much, I went out of control and I was shaking. I would feel all like the anxiety. That's how I felt for 6 months. It was horrible. Bring me back right there by a treatment because you're sick. It was so hard. They put me on a bunch of medication. I have friends here that were here, and my family, my sister could not understand. You know, the day I got surgery, she has a florist, and the day I had surgery, she's like, hey, come do deliveries for me. I'm like, are you sick? I can't even walk, you know? But the people of Narcotics Anonymous, though, they never questioned my condition. They never asked me questions. If I was a bitch, because, you know, menopause comes with hormones and, yeah, mood swings. So they never questioned it. And that's another thing that I've learned in Narcotics Anonymous, is that your family is not necessarily blood. Your family is where you feel comfortable and where you feel like you don't have to explain everything. Sometimes I would get in the meeting, it was the middle of winter, I was sitting on a chair, I was half naked, I was so hot from the hot flashes. You know, like I was pissed off for everything, and everybody would just give me a hug. I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, that's the beauty of Narcotics Anonymous. After I did that treatment, I went back to see the doctor this year in January, and they told me that the treatment didn't work. So it was all back, and my first reaction was like, fucking treatment, shit, stuff didn't work. I was sick like a dog for nothing. But during that summer, I was so sick, and my program showed me that I need to take care of myself. A couple years ago, I would have been sick like that. I would have not taken care of me. I would have been partying, and you know, but Last summer, I was forced to go to the cottage, close my cell phone, just take care of me and find peace with myself and surrender that maybe the treatment wouldn't work, you know? So when I got the news, yes, it was hard. Yes, I've been told that I could maybe not have a child and not be a mom, and that was hard. And that was another thing I had to surrender in my life, you know? That was really hard. But 2 months ago, I found out I was pregnant. So, you know, if I would have not been in Narcotics Anonymous, I would have probably went back out and used when the doctor told me that. Because every mom, every woman, every man in this room that wants to have a child, when you're told that you did a treatment, you were sick like a dog, and you can't have a child, it's a fucking bad news, you know? And a month after that, I had a car accident, I lost my car, I lost my job, it was like, fuck. When is this shit gonna stop falling on me, you know? 2 months later, I got the news I was pregnant. So life is good. It's about like surrender to win, right? It's about getting back up and keep moving. And going to use is not gonna change anything. If I would have went back out and went and used and then find out I was pregnant, maybe I would have lost that child, you know? Maybe it would be sick or whatever. So I'm so grateful to be in these rooms, even if sometimes I want to go out and I want to party like my boyfriend and I want to be like everybody else and I want to do what everybody else is doing. At the end of the day, when I think about it, I'm grateful to be in recovery. I'm grateful to have a mode de vie, a way of life, a 12-step program. I have a sponsor that I can call for any reason in the world, you know? Like my mom, I'll call her with some stuff and she'll be like, stop being such a baby. And I'll call my sponsor and she'll be like, come see me, we'll have a coffee. You know? Like that's the beauty of Narcotics Anonymous. My name is Marie, thank you.
Thanks, Marie. And our next speaker is Meredith.
I'm an addict. My name is Meredith. I'm super nervous. And I've been telling myself for the last couple weeks that this show is going to be different, right? Because I'm at a convention, right? And it's different. And only Orkna speakers speak at Orkna. Why are they asking me to speak? You know, and I had a friend remind me before this that, no, it's just sharing, right? And I don't know if anyone in the room can relate, but I'm a bit of a perfectionist. And so when I was asked to speak and they gave me a topic, I was like, okay, so I'm going to research it and I'm going to, you know, take notes from the basic text and I'm going to say everything I need to say about surrender and it's going to be awesome. And then I've been, you know, stressing myself out, wanting to, like, give this awesome speech about surrender. And really, the only way that I cannot fuck this up is just to tell my story and hope that somebody gets it, right? So that's what I'm going to try and do. So I'll talk a little bit about where I came from. I was raised in a really loving, really safe home. And that was a really, really good excuse for me to keep using for a lot of years because I was like, you know, there was nothing wrong with my childhood. I had a really good childhood, you know, loving parents, big brother, you know, never wanted for anything. But looking back in step work and in reflecting with my sponsor, I can see how I can see that I've always been an addict, right? Like there's always been this void that I've been trying to fill with other stuff. And so it started with like attention and being different and special. And that was like, you know, the thing that I sought outside of myself to make me feel whole. You know, and I tried food and promiscuity and, you know, all sorts of stuff to fill up that void inside me until I found dope. And so, you know, I'm an addict. I've been an addict for a long time, even before I found the dope. And anyway, so I grew up in a really loving home. And I just need a second. Yeah, and nothing was ever, like, really good enough. You know what I mean? Like, I was always trying to find that thing outside of myself that was going to make me enough. And I'm still prone to doing that today. But luckily, this program provides me some tools so that I don't do that as often or as hard or in such dangerous ways, right? So for me, I think using dope kind of started the way it does for a lot of people, like, you know, just trying stuff out. And the thing was that it was different for me from the beginning because it was the thing that filled that void inside me in a way that was so complete that I didn't feel the void inside me. And so it was like, okay, this is it. We're good. You know what I mean? I don't need anything else. I've got this. And so I used, and I drew some lines for myself, having seen other people, you know, using to the point of destruction, one being my older brother. He had some really shitty experiences with drugs. And so I was like, as long as I don't do that, I'll be okay. I'll be safe. And so I drew these lines for myself, and I decided that as long as I didn't cross the lines, that I would be okay. And Marie, it's funny, like, there's so much in your share that I can totally relate to, right? Totally relate to. And I love that in Narcotics Anonymous, because, like, I know Marie, right? Like, a little bit, like, we've, you know, hung out, like, at the camp out and stuff like that. And, like, I just love being able to come here and hear people's stories and be like, fuck, you're just like me, you know? And that's so cool. You guys are my brand of crazy, and that's good. So, sidetracked. What was I talking about? Hey? Right, the lines. Oh, I crossed them. But later, right? Like, as long, the lines kept me safe. The lines kept me different, right? And so it's like, as long as I'm only using these drugs, and as long as I can keep going to work and can keep up my marks in school and my family is still cool with me, then I'm good, right? Then I'm good. And for a lot of years, that totally worked for me. I refused to look at the unmanageability in my life because it was very internal. I had a lot of what I called, like, external manageability, right? Like, I was functioning, like, I was an honors student, and I went to work, and so I was okay. But for me, step one talks about unmanageability, and that unmanageability has always been inside me, you know. And I didn't have a whole lot of external unmanageability in my life, like, you know, abuse in the home or, like, losing everything. My unmanageability was inside, right? Hating my own guts, and just, you know, truly believing this disease when it told me that I was just a worthless piece of shit, you know. I moved around a lot when I was a kid, and I see now that I moved schools every year until high school, basically. And so I got really well trained in being a chameleon, right? Like, being whoever I thought you wanted me to be. And in doing so, I fed my disease because I never really figured out who I actually was. I never really figured out how I actually felt about things or, you know, what my values were. I just so desperately needed you to accept me and love me. And I just never learned how to do that for myself, you know. Every year, I learned, right? I was like, okay, so that didn't work last year, so I'm going to start new at this school, and I'm going to try, you know. I'd go in, and I'd observe, and I'd, you know, be quiet for the first little while, and then I'd just, like, burst forth and be, like, super awesome, and everybody would love me, because it wasn't just that I had to be accepted. I had to be special, and I had to be different, and I still struggle with that today. Yeah, so that was practice for me, and that also, you know, I look at that as kind of like a feeding ground for my disease, right? Because I never learned how to just be me. I never really figured that out. I'm starting to do that slowly but surely through the help of the steps and a loving sponsor in this program. But it's something I kind of missed out on in my earlier years. So without very many coping skills, I had all this, external manageability, and so I was, you know, doing well in school and going to work and stuff, but I was really used to getting to start over, right? Because for so many years, I had gotten to, you know, be a different person every year at a new school. Nobody knows me. I'll be somebody else. I moved back and forth between Toronto and Ottawa a couple times, too. And then I went to a drama high school, so I got to literally, like, hone that skill and practice it, right? And then, you know, I moved around a little bit in Ottawa, and I remember one night sitting on my porch. It was my last year of my undergrad, and I had this kind of like foggy inkling that somehow this was different, that my classmates weren't sitting alone on their balcony at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, just one more before I go to bed, just one, like, I was just like, I don't know that everybody else is using like this. I don't know that everybody else is doing what I'm doing, right? And so I had this little inkling, and then it was, you know, that was it. That was all. And I decided that maybe things would be different if I went away. So I decided to go to Australia, and so I did, and I went and I enrolled in a master's program there, and I left, and I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna do drugs anymore. I'm just gonna go, and I'm gonna be a different person again. And 2 weeks, I got 2 weeks in, and I found the people, right? I found the people, and I kept using, but it was getting worse because I was starting to see more how it was impacting my life, right? Because like I'm in this beautiful country, like as far away from home as I could possibly get without coming back, and all the other international students are off on a trip, but I already spent all my money, right, on dope and alcohol, and I can't afford to go. And that started to kind of like, I could kind of start to see that like that's not normal, you know. And I manipulated the shit out of my parents for money, because, you know, I'd been doing that for years. I have a raging sense of entitlement, and they took care of me, right? They've always taken care of me. They've always bailed me out. They with the best of intentions, right? Because they love me, and so I just kind of believe that I deserve that. And so being in a, you know, across the world, I realized like I can get so much more out of them because they're fucking terrified that I won't make it home otherwise, right? So, you know, lots of things happened while I was over there, like how many times I got robbed and like, oh my God, not the case. But yeah, I, you know, just classic addict behavior. And I came home from Australia when the money ran out, and my parents had come to visit me, and they, I think they could kind of see that I wasn't okay, even though I still had, you know, my external manageability. I was starting to feel it more too. It was starting to show. I was really unhealthy. One of the manifestations of this disease for me is eating disordered behavior patterns, where it's like, you know, the extremes, right? Because us addicts were extreme, right? It's like severe deprivation or like way over consumption, and there's nothing in the middle, right? And so I was treating my body really badly, and I was really unwell. And I think they saw that, and so they kind of drew the line. They were like, no more money, no more money. You have to come home now. And so I came home, and I was not very happy with myself because, you know, don't you know I wanted to do all these things while I was over there, and I didn't. And basically, you know, my bottom was a 4-month period between getting home from Australia and lying in the fetal position alone, you know, with locked doors, not being able to stop sobbing and wondering, like, I'm a relatively intelligent person, and the disease was so, like, so loud in my head that I was actually convinced that if I drank a bottle of bleach, it would cleanse the shame from the inside out. Like, that was a real plan for me at that point, you know? I was really just fucked up, and I was in a lot of pain, and you know, my life on the outside didn't look that bad, you know, but I had started losing things, right? And I crossed those lines that, because, you know, all those years, like, with, like, in, you know, my teen years and early 20s and then going into, like, traveling and stuff like that, I stuck with my boundaries around what I was going to use, because that kept me safe, right? And when I got back and shit started to fall apart, I crossed those lines, and that scared me so much, because I had stuck to them for so many years that I was like, oh God, what next? What fresh hell is possibly waiting for me if I'm willing to do this now, you know? And then I start, you know, I lost some things. I got sick, and I put myself in really dangerous situations, and as a result of that, I was planning on running again, because, you know, it worked so well for me the last time. I was like, okay, yeah, insanity, do it again, see if it works differently this time. So I had landed myself a job in Honduras, and I was going to go teach at an international school, and 2 weeks before my flight was scheduled to leave, I went to see my doctor to sign my medical certificate, and she refused. She said no. This woman's known me since I was 11 years old, and she said, nope, I'm not signing shit. You're not going anywhere. You need to do something, you know? And, you know, I was devastated. I was full of despair. I hated my own guts. I was lying to my parents so that they wouldn't have to see me, because I just couldn't stop crying. And then I stopped going to work. You know, and I just crossed all the lines, right? Like, my relationship with my family, the work, the, you know what I mean? Like, everything was it was like, okay, well, I'm a mess. And my higher power is loving and caring and kind, and sent somebody who knew me just enough to get me in the car, off the floor and into the car, into a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. A dear friend of mine who got clean 6 months before I did, and she took me to a meeting, and I was high and I cried the whole time, and I'm pretty sure I said, I think I'm an addict, and I went home and I got high, but I was like, I gotta do something, you know, and I did. And for me, because of, you know, my patterns in my life, I was like, I'll go away somewhere and get better. So I did. I went away to treatment. And for me, that was what I needed, you know, the distance and the safe place. Because I wanted to come here and I wanted you guys to tell me how to get high without all the other shit. I didn't want to not use, right? So, you know, there's some people in this room who might remember, you know, how are you feeling? I want to get high. Fuck you. You know, for the first little while. And I'm really grateful that I had a safe place where I didn't do that. And they brought me to an NA meeting every single day. And I went to an NA meeting every day for the first 5 months. Man, what a ride. I came into Narcotics Anonymous this program has given me a life that I couldn't have possibly imagined for myself, in the simplest and the biggest of ways, right? Like, I kind of like myself today. That's a big deal. That's a big deal, you know? And some days I really do truly accept and love myself. And that's a win. It's not every day. It's absolutely not every day, right? Like, I have like a suitcase of bats that I use to just wail on myself if I make a mistake. And I, you know, and I struggle. But I like myself today. And I am working on truly accepting and loving myself today. And the steps help me get there, right? The steps have helped me not just stay clean, right? Because I could have stayed clean and stuck around and still been the same person and kept hating myself, right? Like, I hated myself for a reason. I needed to change, right? Absolutely everything. And so, you know, I'm in the process of doing that. So, early recovery. So, I like perfection, and I like control, and I like doing good things, and I like pats on the head, and I like A pluses and gold stars, right? That's kind of me. And so there were these people, and they were like, okay, so, you know, you go to a meeting and you share and you get a sponsor and you do this. And I was like, done, I'll do it, I'll do everything, pat me on the head. And you know, and so I just launched myself into the things that were suggested in this program. I was super, super blessed. I got brought to the Canadian Convention of Narcotics Anonymous at 57 days clean. Like, what a fire, right? What a fire. I love conventions. I seriously love conventions. They're a huge part of my recovery. This weekend's going to be great, guys. I'm really excited. So that was huge for me, you know, getting to look around and see like thousands of addicts and hear these people who were like, you know, an unfathomable amount of clean, right? Like, I'm not even 2 months and they're like, you know, 30 some odd years. And it helped me to start to believe that this was a real thing, that people were getting better, that people were having lives, that you know, just that sense of identification. I don't know. It's the empathy and the sense of identification that I find in Narcotics Anonymous are one of the greatest gifts of my entire life, because I walked around for my entire life just not feeling truly ever a part of or like I belonged anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, I was always trying so hard, but I never really fit, and I never really stuck around long enough to know. And like, I fit here, I belong here. Like, picking up the basic text and bursting into tears because I'm like, somebody wrote that book for me. It's about me, you know? And I still feel that way when I hear people share, and I'm like, God, I can relate to that. I too want to control everything. And that's painful. it sucks. It's kind of where I'm at in my life right now. I'm in a process of surrender. Like, everything in Narcotics Anonymous for me is practice and process. And that's impossibly difficult for me because I want perfection and I want immediacy, you know? So practice and process to me are like, why? But I'm practicing, and it's not pretty. It's not pretty a lot of the time. But you guys get me, you know? And I have a sponsor who gets me, and not only does she get me, but she shares who she is with me so that I know that I'm not alone, you know? And speaking of launching, right? Like, so they told me, you know, do all these things, get a sponsor. So I asked the first woman who I thought would be a good sponsor for me to be my sponsor, and she said no, and I was devastated, right? I'll never have a sponsor. I'm too difficult. Nobody will ever love me. And not the case. So I asked a second woman, and she said no. And the whole process again, right? And I'm like, you know, and comparing is a big struggle for me. And so I'm like, they all have sponsors, and I don't have a sponsor, and I'm different. And then this woman walked into the treatment center. We had speakers every Friday night, and she spoke, and I was just like, no way, that's the one. And I like just attacked her after she spoke. I'm pretty sure I didn't even ask. I said, sponsor me. And she was like, whoa, we gotta talk about that. Got trust issues, back up. And she's been my sponsor ever since, and I feel really blessed to have that, right? Because this is, Narcotics Anonymous is teaching me about longevity in relationships and commitment and being vulnerable, you know, and allowing myself to be vulnerable enough to be seen by another human being. And it really helps when that person is willing to do the same, you know? And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about this thing is that we do that together, right? It's not me standing up here and telling you all about me and you guys are all gonna be like, ooh, she's crazy, and not tell me anything, right? You're gonna share with me too. So, step one, powerless, unmanageable, yeah. So I'm pretty good today. I'm pretty comfortable saying, like, I am completely and utterly powerless over all dope, right? All drugs and like mind and mood altering chemicals, right? Accepting my powerlessness over addiction is more difficult for me. 'Cause addiction is this disease that is just like in all areas of my life, right? Like, it's not just the dope, it's my thinking and my perception and my sense of proportion and my inability to put things into perspective and proportion. And so I have to practice surrendering every single day. And sometimes I'm saying the words by rote and I'm not really giving it up. I'm not really turning it over. I'm not really, you know, and sometimes I do and there's this blissful moment of like, you know, and then something happens. I'm like, yoink, I'll take that and I'm going to control all of this. You know, some areas are more difficult for me than others. You know, my work, my career, I have a really hard time surrendering to the fact that I don't know what that's going to look like, you know, 6 months, a year, however long from now. And so I have to keep practicing, you know, and remembering that it is a process and that I don't do it once and it's all done. Because that's how I've done everything my whole life, right? Like, I'll try it. I want to do it perfectly the first time. I want to get it done. And if I don't do it, fuck that. I'm out. I'm not doing it, right? I don't want to make mistakes. I don't want to be, you know, less than. I want to get it right or I don't want to do it at all. And so having to fall flat on my face and get back up like so many times around the same issue, you know, sometimes I have a really hard time with that. And that's where this program steps in and gives me a relationship with a sponsor who says, yeah, me too. That's hard. You're gonna get through it, you know? And that's why I have a home group where I go and I can just be a mess, you know? And they will, they'll just hug me and, you know, check in on me all week too. How cool is that, you know? I don't have anything for them the way that, you know, I used to look for things in people. I have, you know, who I am today, but that's what they want from me. They want me to be who I am. And that's a really cool gift that I get from Narcotics Anonymous too, because I've never been a really good picker either. I don't know if anybody has ever had that experience of like the people in my life, you know? But I'm learning, right? I'm learning to surround myself with people who want the same things as I do, right? Who want this life. And so that's really important for me. How much time do I have? I feel like I've been talking for a long time. Oh God, okay. I'm gonna do my best, but if I feel like I'm starting to spout bullshit, I'm just gonna stop. So I will talk about the steps themselves. I mean, step one, accepting that I'm powerless, admitting that my life is unmanageable. If I'm not willing to admit my powerlessness around an area, I will become unmanageable, you know, and I'm in that process right now with my work. You know, I've spent an agonizing number of hours editing, like, you know, the little, like, everything on this, you know, one document to be sent off for this application, and just, like, countless hours agonizing. And it's, like, it's almost a form of, like, being mean to myself, right? Because like it's been ready for a while, right? But I'm staying in that fear place of like, I gotta check again. Well, I sent it off today and that feels good. And now comes the practice of surrendering to the fact that I did the footwork and it's out of my hands now, right? I just finished a fourth step with my sponsor, which taught me, you know, a lot again about that willingness to be vulnerable and being who I am. And it's funny because one of the goals that I set on my fourth was to stop taking myself so seriously. And I finished it like, you know, what, 6 or 8 weeks ago, and that's all I've been doing is taking myself way too seriously. And it's like, I don't know, in the way that my higher power works often is that the things I need to work on the most, I get the most opportunity to work on, right? Like, I learned really early on not to pray for patience because I will get opportunities to practice it and I don't like that. I mean, I get them anyway, but I don't want more, right? I don't want to ask for more. But like, I don't know, working the steps helps me connect with, helps me figure out who I am, what my values are, and can, you know, connect with another human being in a way that I just, you know, I've never known how to do, right? Like, sponsorship is just such an extraordinary, extraordinary gift, because not just for the steps either, right? Because I showed up here not knowing how to feed myself properly, or, you know, treat myself or treat other people, or, you know, like all these basic life skills that I think a lot of us, that I showed up here without. And I found this person who, you know, she's not a guru. She's just been through the process of figuring out those things for herself. So she has the capacity to help me do that for me, you know, and very similar to what was shared earlier in, you know, the relationship of being a sponsor is a huge area of learning and growth for me, because I want to control it, and I want to tell you what to do, and I want to fix it, and I can't, right? And it's a beautiful, frustrating, painful area where I get to practice surrendering, you know, and trust comes in there too, right? Because, like, I'm not that powerful, right? I'm not that important. I'm not that clever. Like, my way is not necessarily going to work for another person. My higher power and her higher power and your higher power, that way is probably going to work. And I don't necessarily know what that is. So I'm learning to just share what I've got and hope that that helps, you know, in the same way that my sponsor shares what she's got and hopes that that helps. Yeah, and then service and self-care. Those are kind of like my pillars, right? Step, sponsor, service, and self-care. I started doing service because I wanted everybody to look at me and like me and pat me on the head. I would just like run around all the events in London, like being all like, look at me, look what I'm doing. I'm doing so great, you know, And somewhere along the line, I started to feel like, hey, this is really cool. I'm a real part of something, you know? And all of you people who watched me as a newcomer fluttering around trying to be all important, like, you guys, you know, didn't laugh at me, you laughed with me, you know what I mean? And let me grow through that. And I'm super grateful for the people that come before me for that, you know? Letting me be a, you know, crazy newcomer and loving me anyway. And service helps me feel a part of, and it helps me feel like I have value for being who I am, you know, for bringing what I've got to the table. And it helps me feel like I have a voice, but just the one, not a better than yours, bigger than yours, more important than yours. But I have a voice, and it's a part of this, and it's, you know, I don't know. My very first experience with Unity, right? Being a part of service, and I'm not perfect at it. I still sometimes want to be all like, "Hey, look at me," but I'm working on it. And self-care, that's a really important one. Learning how to, you know, take care of myself, and love myself, and accept myself for who I am, and not try and force other people to accept me because I can't do it, you know, because I'm prone to that. No, you accept me. No, I have to do that. That's my job. But, you know, I've got patterns that have been ingrained in me for a lot of years, and it's going to take some years of work for that to change. I don't get to just be, you know, where I think I should be overnight. That fucking word should. Plays a really big role in my head. And so I don't know, I'm really grateful to be here. I love weekends like this because I get to really feel that gratitude, you know? And for me, that's one of the biggest, most important ways that I can combat my disease, is just to simply be grateful, right? Because I've got this beautiful life. Okay, I've got this beautiful, beautiful life, and it's full, and I've, you know, I'm developing trusting relationships with my family, and I'm there for them, and I show up for them, and I'm accountable, and I do a job that I absolutely love, and I have the potential to do more of that in different ways, and I have a wonderful, loving partner who just meets me where I am, and, you know, who just, oh my God, and I have all this beautiful stuff in my life. I have a home group. I have, you know, and I can still sit and wallow in this fucking woe is me, self-pity, life is horrible bullshit. Like, what is up with that? My life is so good. But my disease wants me overwhelmed and alone, right? And so I got to watch out for that. I've got to watch that because that's prime positioning for me. If I'm overwhelmed and I'm alone, I'm probably going to end up using. It may not start with dope. It may start with, you know, some other old behaviors. But I'm going to end up getting high, right? And I need to be really mindful of that. I have what I have in my life because I'm clean. And not just because I'm clean, but because I'm doing what you guys have told me to do. And I have to be really aware of that, right? And gratitude is just, it makes all the difference in the world. Because if I'm practicing gratitude, you know, for the partner who gets up in the morning and helps me get my ass to work super early, even though he doesn't have to go to work for another little while, you know, if I can just say thank you for that, rather than being like, well, you didn't do this, you know, like, look at what I do have, you know what I mean? If I can be in my job and loving what I'm doing in that moment, rather than being like, but I'm not where I thought I should be yet, you know, like, I go to this place where it's back to this place where nothing's enough, you know, and that's my disease. And it's really effective in my head when I don't talk about it, when I'm not being real about how it's making me feel, you know, and that's why I need other people, right? Because I'm not always conscious of it for what it is at that moment. I need you to be a mirror for me. I need you to help call me on my bullshit, right? Because I don't spot my own bullshit right away, if at all, right? I need you to help me see it so that I can do some acceptance around it. And so I need to show up at meetings, and I need to share honestly, and I need to write honestly in my step work, you know, and I need to talk to people. And practice some gratitude for what I do have, rather than focusing on what I don't have, you know, because it's maybe not that I don't have it, it's maybe not, either that it's not right for me and I just don't know that, and I can practice some acceptance and surrender around that, you know, and have faith and trust that this higher power who has brought me here for all the reasons that I came here, you know, I haven't yet been led astray to the point where, you know, I've died or like, I'm here. I've been brought here, but somehow I forget to just trust that I'm also being brought somewhere else, that I'm being guided somewhere else, that you know, I don't get to know what it looks like, but that I'm going somewhere, and it's probably going to be better than I think it is, and it's probably going to happen sooner than I think it's going to, too. Classic. So I have lost my train of thought, which I think means I'm finished. Thank you so much for letting me share, and have a wonderful convention.
All right, well, on behalf of Orkna 28, I would like to thank Marie and Meredith for sharing their experience, strength, and hope with us. Please join us in a circle to close this meeting with the we version of the Serenity Prayer.